Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Yankees and Gravy. My name is Tommy Casabona. I'm your host. Thank you so much for tuning in. Want to hit the top with a couple of plugs. Please, as always, follow us on Twitter at Yankees and Gravy. Find us on Facebook. It's Yankee Gravy, not Yankees and Gravy. Yankee Gravy on Facebook. If you can, if you don't mind, I want to make this interactive as much as possible. So please, if you can, please email me at yankeesandgravy@gmail.com. Nice and simple. Now, if you want to listen to the podcast on a regular basis, and like I said, what I'm trying to do is give you guys, you know, you Yankee fanatics out there, or you just podcast fanatics in general out there who do like them some Yankees, I want to give you guys a listen each and every week, multiple times a week, of some good Yankee talk. You know what I mean? Interactive stuff, opinions, commentary. Like I said, not a professional broadcaster. This is a make-believe radio program. But there's not a lot of stuff out there as far as if you're just looking for your Yankee fix during the week. I'm looking to bring that to you. So let's do it together. Email me at yankeesandgravy@gmail.com, and we'll get your questions, your comments on the air. Looking for you guys to give me a little back and forth, give me a hard time with some of the stupid shit I say. Because if there's one thing that we can guarantee, ladies and gentlemen, is that I will say some stupid shit. All right, let's get into it. Oh, actually, no, I wanted to tell you this too. If you want to have a regular, if you want to be able to regularly hear this podcast, the best way to do it is to go on iTunes. And we are on iTunes. All you have to do is go to the App Store, download the podcast app for iTunes. Very simple. It's free. Just download it. It comes up as another app on your iPhone. And then when you download that app, open it, search for Yankees and Gravy, and you'll get me on iTunes, and you will be able to check it periodically, and you'll see every time there's a new episode that comes up. And we're trying to put them out there for you. We're trying to get some Yankee dialogue going on as things heat up, and there is never been a better time to do it as we sit here right now. 5.5 game lead. Got to be excited about that. When, I don't even have this information, but what are we at? 3 years now? 3-4 years that we can actually say we had a 5.5 game lead in the American League East. Things are good, guys. Things are very good. I was talking to my buddy Brendan. We talked about something interesting. You know, Jeter's not on this team, in case anybody was living under a rock, but neither is Cano. And you kind of have to wonder, through the years, I didn't even plan on talking about this really, but I just want to touch it on it at the top. Through the years, the Yankees were always so star-driven. Now you still got A-Rod, to a lesser degree, Tex. And no, yeah, Tex is the better player right now, but we're talking about star power. A-Rod is not acting like a star. A-Rod is not acting and operating and carrying himself, per se, like the A-Rod star that was 2001, 2005, 2006, whatever. Even when he joined the Yankees, you know, when he had that huge year. He's not, you know, basically what I'm trying to say is that this is like a lunch pail team. It's like a blue-collar team. They're obviously not. They're multi-millionaires with MVP-type, you know, numbers to boot. But, you know, they're kind of carrying themselves like the everyman. And, you know, Derek Jeter, you gotta kind of feel, especially last year when there was no A-Rod, there was Derek Jeter, and then there was everybody else, it seems like. Now, Derek Jeter, we've talked about how I felt good and bad about him in certain ways. Obviously, the guy is a New York Yankee legend, and we were more than lucky to have him for all these years. But without, you can't help but think that a lot of times change is good. This is a veteran. It's his way or the highway. Things are, I'm not saying he threw his weight around, guys. Don't, you know, I get labeled as the big Jeter hater, and I'm not. I you know, I'm just a little, play a little devil's advocate sometimes when it comes to DJ. But him being away from this team and being off this team, you know, sucked, because you know what? Who's the leader? You know what? Maybe the fact that there is no real clear-cut leader, maybe that's a good thing, because maybe these guys are gelling more as a unit. Cano, I like too, but Cano was an attitude guy. You know damn well that he didn't get re-signed not because the Yankees didn't think he was talented. I think it was a culture thing. A lot of people, as it pertains to paying them what he wanted, I think they were okay with letting him go. I think they're sad to lose his baseball skills, but I think they're happy that the shift in culture brings with a guy like Cano not there anymore. And you know what? I certainly wouldn't trade Jacoby Ellsbury for Robinson Cano today, the way they're both playing. All right, so like I said, 5.5-game lead. This is the high water mark for the year, definitely. Several years, probably. I know last year they weren't ever 5.5 games up, and I don't think they were the year before that. And maybe not the year before that. I'd have to kind of go and check it out. But maybe you guys can tell me. That's what YankeesandGravy@gmail.com is for. So you get on your computer, you log on, you go to, you know, you go to your email, wherever it is, and you type in compose to YankeesandGravy@gmail.com, and then you just begin to type in about how much of a moron I am because I host a Yankee podcast, and I can't even tell you the last time they were 5.5 games up. I don't blame you. Bring it on. That's what we want here. Come on. In this past series, Baltimore just seemed overmatched. You know what I mean? It was a highly anticipated series. It was a few things could have happened. You know, this might be the beginning of the end for Baltimore. But this was an opportunity for Baltimore to crawl back into this thing and, you know, make that American League or keep that American League East, that already tight division, to get it even tighter. But they seemed overmatched from the start. We jumped out early in most of these games, and that kind of sent an early message. Now, they were close. They gave it a couple of close games, and I'm not saying the Orioles got their asses kicked, besides to, you know, today meaning July 23rd. We gave them a pounding today. But the other games, they were competitive, and the Orioles were in, but they were in it, but they just didn't seem to want to be there. I mean, it seemed like because we were scoring early and we were doing our thing, and it just felt as though they, you know, even Buck usually has that swagger in that dugout. He's walking around. He does a little antagonistic stuff, and he tries to, you know, stir the pot a little bit. He just even seemed like he was beaten. I never did one time did I feel nervous about the Yankees really losing this series. What else? We got a good job, good performance out of, because the starters in this series were 4-5-1. So that was Evaldi, Nova, and Tanaka. All the boys did what they were supposed to do. You got to love that. All is well in the Bronx, man. They're looking good, and you got to be happy. The Penn did their job. Everybody looked good. And what I do like as well is that they are starting to spread the offensive wealth. Even Headley got in on the act today. That was a huge hit by Headley today. We were freaking, you know, bases loaded, first inning, no outs. You're like, you know what? We're going to freaking stomp these guys. This is it. This is, you know, you're down 0-2, and now we got bases loaded, no outs in the first inning. They probably were like, you know what? Can we just go home? And then the pitcher, whatever, I'm sorry, I forgot who started for them today. But he got two outs, and it was, it was two outs, and Headley, it was left up to Headley, and Headley crushed the double and scored and cleared the bases. That was huge. Beltran's starting to do it a little bit. Didi's getting some hits. Ellsbury is finding his rhythm, and you got to like that because they're starting to – that's one thing, you know what I mean? You don't want to see the team being carried by Gardner setting the table and then – A-Rod, and then Tex. You don't want, you know, even when they are winning, even though when they are killing it, looking good, you know, eventually, if it's a three-man show, it will catch up to you. So it's good that we're spreading the wealth, and it's good that it's a different guy, because I think that truly is the mark of a championship team, which is what I want to talk to you guys about right now. Take a look at this team as it sits right now. There's nobody that can deny right now, A, obviously, we're hot as hell. But, and this is a good team, but is this a great team? Is this a team that can get us number 28? Interesting question. And I guess it has to be answered very carefully. At first glance, looking around the league, seeing what everybody else has. Now, I know I talk out of both sides of my mouth a lot, and there's a big difference between can this team win the World Series? Because the answer is yes, it can. You know what I mean? It's gonna make we're gonna make the playoffs. Knock on wood. And then once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen. But are we looking at this team? And if we analyze it from afar, is this a team that we can feel confident should have a good chance to win the World Series? At this point, when you look at the other teams, you look at us, our age, you look at things, and you kind of dissect it. I think the answer to that is no right now, to be honest with you. I do think we need another piece. I do think, and this is, you know, whatever. I mean, it is what it is. How can you, you know, you don't want to jinx anybody. You don't want to have negative attitudes. But how can you really look at this team and say that nobody's good? We're not going to lose anybody. You know what I mean? We've had the worst luck the last 2 years. This year, we've had pretty good luck. I mean, we did lose Miller for a little while. We did lose Ellsbury for a little while. And they're back, and they seem to have not missed a beat. You know what I mean? But look at what you're talking about. You're talking about A-Rod. You're talking about Tex. These guys always get hurt. You're talking about CC. He's been hurt. Tanaka is a freaking ticking time bomb with the elbow. Pineda, on an innings limit, he's not showing any signs of being hurt, but he's been hurt every freaking year besides this one since 2011. So I'm a little, you know, call me just the paranoid and the, you know, nervous wreck Yankee fan, but you have to expect, or at least I don't want to say assume, but you have to kind of be worried that somebody's going to go down, a key guy's going to go down, and when that happens, it's going to be a hole no matter where it is. I do like the fact that we have some depth: Chris Young, Carlos Beltran, Garrett Jones, people like that, you know, who are not necessarily full time. I know Beltran is basically a full time player, but he comes out a lot for defensive purposes. And he is a defensive liability, make no mistake. You just worry that, you know, one of these guys are going to have to step up at some point. Pitching, too. You're going to tell me none of these guys are going to go down? I mean, I don't know. I hope not. But either way, the way you look at this team, you have to wonder if Cashman isn't going to go in and get another piece, because I think he does need to. Here are some other concerns that I have with this team. And again, I know I'm nitpicking. I know we're 5.5 games up. But, you know, we've been a part of a lot of, you know, good years. And we know a good team when we see one as Yankee fans. And here's some of the things that you'd like to see improved. One second. All right. The run differential is only 35. That's third in the division. We are a five and a half game lead over everybody, but we're third in third in the division as far as run differential. That's 35. So we only have 35 more, you know, runs gotten than we've given up. Toronto's better, and I think who else is it? Let me see. Toronto is better than us in that department, and the Orioles are still better than us in that department, but I guess that's not much of a concern, because as of right now, the Orioles are 7 games back. They're going to have to do some work and do it fast if they're not going to want to fade into where the Red Sox are right now. And you got to say, the Red Sox obviously are still technically in it, but they barely have a pulse. I would say they're probably pretty much done. You don't have to really worry about the Sox. Shouldn't say that either, because the Sox are beasts. We know when they get hot, they get hot. But the Angels really kind of bang them around a little bit. All right, so the run differential, only 35, only third in the division. We are the way we score our runs, just under 50% of the runs we score come from the home run. So I think it's like 48%, which is second in the league, most reliant on our runs for the home run, for the long ball, other than the Dodgers. You would like to see a little bit more versatility in the way we score. We are very reliant on the home run. What does that tell you? When things get tight, when the pitching staffs kind of condense and consolidate at the end of the year, you're facing better pitching. Better pitching beats better hitting, especially when you're sitting around waiting for a long ball. These pitches, you know, they're going to go down to 3, maybe sometimes 4-man rotations when it's crunch time and in the playoffs. So it's like, you know, you're not going to be able to rely on these home runs against these flamethrowers, these, you know, frontline pitchers that some of these playoff teams are going to come to the table with. And you're going to want to see a team that is able to do a little bit more manufacturing of their runs. That's the way I see it, at least. What else? The other thing is, there's not much drama / mystique and aura. You know, the mystique and aura is a phrase that we used to use with the old ballpark. We'll get into that in a minute too, because, you know, don't ever think that you're going to get through a podcast from me without me waxing about the old days a little bit, and the old stadium is included in that story too. And we're going to get to that in a little while too. But I don't know. What I'm trying to say is that usually when there is a team, and the Yankees certainly were not favored to win at the beginning, you're kind of coming from still an underdog standpoint. And a lot of times when that happens, look back in 2009, and in the 90s teams, what you always thought about, you had that feeling that you were never out of a game. And why? Because of all the comeback wins that you would have. You know, the Yankees always were good with cup. How that year in 2009, and A.J. Burnett was whatever, pain in the ass as anybody. But, you know, there was something to that team when we were doing those, you know, those pies in the face all the time, because it seemed like every week, at least once a week, we'd have some dramatic comeback win. And when that happens, a certain level of confidence is built. And it just kind of gives your team, it brings everybody together, because, you know, but let's face it, baseball can be boring. Baseball's a long, monotonous season, and, you know, those dog days, you know, even when you're winning, it could be kind of boring. What keeps it exciting and what keeps the legs under you and what keeps the heart pumping is when you could pull out some freaking late inning comeback wins. And that's what we did a lot of in 2009. And I think, it keeps the excitement going. It keeps team chemistry at a high level, because if you're jumping up and down, congratulating each other dramatically every freaking night, you know, everybody, you know, everybody's going to get along, and everybody's going to be that much more pumped, and it's going to be a bit more of a family unit. Most importantly, I think, though, it gives you that confidence, lets you know that, you know what, we came back how many times this year? We're going to do it again. Whereas if, you know, you're winning, but if you're losing, you're not necessarily coming back. You're winning maybe 75% of the time, 65% of the time, but when you do get behind, you do tend to stay back. You know, that just means XYZ team comes out, gets a 3-0 lead. You feel, oh, well, I guess we're losing this one. No, we want the comebacks. That gives you, you know. The other thing I am concerned about is our defense. It's still there, guys. No offense. I mean, I was at the game. They don't always say it on the broadcasts, but if you're at the game, I mean, Teixeira, he's basically looks like a freaking hockey goalie out there. He's standing on his head. He's coming off the bag. He's picking balls out of the dirt. It's very rare that this guy gets a ball that hits him on a fly. He is playing a tremendous, maybe one of the most underrated parts of this team still right now is Mark Teixeira's defense at first base, because he is earning every penny of what he's getting just by saving balls from going into the stands, going into the dirt, and getting those outs. And believe me, if you ask those infielders, they will admit it. Didi Gregorius has a rocket freaking arm, and he doesn't always know where this ball's going. And defense in general too. Speaking of Didi, you know, I know he's come around a little bit with the bat, but he is not that lights out defensive guy that warrants you putting up with such an anemic, you know, an anemic bat. You want to see him. I saw two plays when I was at the game that he, I'm not going to say they were errors, but they were plays that he could have made that he just didn't make. There was also one with Eovaldi too. He could have made that one with Eovaldi that actually broke up the no-hitter, I think it was. Not that he was going to get a no-hitter, but that was the first hit. It was a slow roller. He goes to pick it up, and he just misses it, leaves the ball right where it was because he tried to barehand it. My point is Didi Gregorius is hitting much better, and he's not playing a bad defense. But I want something. I want this guy. The guy is supposed to be, the guy is supposed to be a star defensive player. And you know what? Hit 230. Okay. I don't need you hitting 245. Hit 230. But you know what? Be a freaking stud at shortstop. That's what I'd prefer. So those are my main concerns, and obviously the pitching and the my fear of the injury bug hitting us. But other than that, that's what I think we have to be concerned about and we have to look at. Like I said before, I do like the fact that we're spreading the wealth. Aside from the top stars, you know what I mean, the usual suspects, which is Gardner, A-Rod, and Teixeira, what you do like is that Beltran has started to hit. And, you know, you like Beltran because he's an all-time postseason player. So to have him up and going and, you know, kind of like back in those days when we had those, we had a bunch of pinch hitters, guys, and not even necessarily pinch hitters, part-time players, not everyday players. You know, some of the names that run through my mind were Cecil Fielder, even further back, Ruben Sierra, Darryl Strawberry, David Justice. These types of guys were on your bench, and, you know, they just, you know, put the fear of God into the other team. If these guys were ever going to, you know what I mean, if these lower-level part-time slash pinch hit type guys. Now, I know Beltran's a starter, but he does get taken out. There are going to be times, you know, when we're going to want to put in, a fielding specialist, you know, late in games and stuff like that. Didi is hitting now respectable. Like I said, I'd like to see him get a little better at the defense. He's not embarrassing himself. He's not that automatic out anymore at the end. Ellsbury finding his groove, which is awesome. He came off a little hurt. You know, we came off his injury a little slow, and he wasn't doing so great. And then he came out of the All-Star break, you know, still a little shitty. But now he seems like he's finding his groove. He's hitting the ball hard. He's, you know, running around those base paths, causing havoc. And Ellsbury seems to be Ellsbury again. And like I said, even Headley got in on the act today, meaning the 23rd. That was a huge, huge hit. And you hope to see more than that from this guy because he's playing a corner infield position and we got him locked down for 5 years. So, I mean, I hope we're not signing up for freaking 9 home runs and 245 batting average for the next 5 years out of a third baseman. Excuse me. All right. What else did we want to cover? Are we a team that's ready? We talked about that. I think we just have to add a few pieces. If we don't add any pieces, let's just say we don't trade anybody. Then I think, you know, I still think the main need for this team is a starting pitcher. And, I guess what's going to happen? If, let's just say, a Pineda goes down. If Pineda goes down, what would the Yankees do right now? Good question, right? Who knows? Maybe they get a hired gun, even if it's after the deadline. Or maybe we do bring up Severino. I don't know what's going to go on with that. But if Severino is the guy, supposed to be the guy, if they don't get anybody, and they're planning on giving Severino a shot, then let that be it. You know what I mean? I'm hearing mixed reports about, you know, what the Yankees plan on doing and who's available. I know Cashman said nobody's untouchable. And while that may be true, that nobody's officially untouchable, it's pretty common knowledge, pretty much common knowledge from everything you hear that Severino, Judge, and Bird are untouchable. They do not want to part with any of those three guys. I'm also hearing Mateo as well, who's way behind those guys. He's a Class A shortstop, but they really, really like this guy, and they're saying that he could be the real deal. He might be the next Jeter. I mean, he's probably not going to be the next Jeter. That's not likely, but, you know, Didi may fill this spot for a year or two, a couple of years, and then, keeping it warm for this guy, Mateo, who seems to have a lot of tools, a lot of speed. Good hitter, good defense. Even though he's only an A ball, he is considered one of the top 3 to 5 prospects, depending upon who you ask. What does that mean? What names didn't I just mention there? That means that Ref Snyder and that catcher Sanchez are still on the table. That's some of the things that I've heard is that a lot of the teams that I guess Cashman's talking to are leaking it out there that the Yankees are kind of throwing that Sanchez name around. So, I mean, this guy was supposed to be the number one catching prospect. I guess they know they're pretty confident they're going to have McCann for a little while, as well as a solid backup in John Ryan Murphy. But I guess they just don't like this guy so much as a catcher, I guess. They think he's a little rough. They're tough on their catchers, man. I mean, what's the deal with Austin Romine? I got to look that up. I don't know offhand. I know he's playing right now. I know he joined. I think he's in AAA, too. But I guess as far as status, I guess he's fallen from grace a little bit. But because you don't hear him as like the top 2, 3, 4 catchers like you used to. He is a good catcher. This guy can play defense and is a very reliable defensive catcher. He's a catching first catcher. I think Sanchez is a hitter first and defensive catcher second. And if you know the Yankees, you know, they prefer a defensive catcher. They dealt with it with Jorge, but man, they freaking gave my boy Jorge a hard time, didn't they, at the end? They were rough on him on the way out. Ugh, that's one of the part of the reasons why Cashman just freaking bothers the hell out of me when he does shit like that. But all right, so Ref Snyder and Sanchez are still on the table, and it sounds like those are, I don't know what the deal was with Ref Snyder. It's I don't know. Are you hearing little rumblings that he may have been a little cocky when he was? Well, he definitely is cocky / confident. Now, whether that was in a good way or a bad way, I guess that's what some people are kind of like, you know, who knows? Because they say he maybe had a little bit more of a swagger than maybe he should have as a rookie. And that could be part of the reason why he finds himself back in the minor leagues. Maybe not. Maybe it's just hearsay. Who the F knows? What I did hear also was that any of the frontline starters that were out there, whether it's Hamels, Cueto, anybody that's out there, these teams are not going to give any of them up without getting Severino. And from what I'm also hearing, that is a deal breaker, and that's just not going to happen. Brian Cashman is not going to give up the number one organizational pitching prospect for any of these guys, especially since they're going to be free agents soon, so it's not going to happen. So having said that, it doesn't look like any of the frontline starting rotation guys are on the table, so it may just be Mr. I'm having a lot of trouble with his name, even though I had a teacher named Mr. Severino when I was younger, but I'm getting confused between Severino and Paul Severino. So it's Severino. That's the guy's freaking name. Let's say it three times. Severino, Severino, Severino. Hopefully we could freaking remember that. What else? All right, so yeah, he's going to be staying, so it doesn't look like we're going to get a frontline guy. What am I hearing? I heard today that we were looking at Chapman. Ugh. Today was the first time I heard that, and at first I thought it was who's the guy on ESPN? I forgot his name. Let's see if I could find it here. I should know this guy's name, but I don't. What do you want me to tell you? A little bit of a moron. Yeah, Tim Kurjan on ESPN. That's his name. Tim Kurjan put it out there, and I actually tweeted. I accused him of freaking making it up because I'm keeping my ear pretty close to the grindstone on most of this stuff, and I hadn't heard that. And the guy was like, yeah, I think the – and this is what he said verbatim, and I'm not making this up. He actually said, I think the Yankees are going to pick up a guy like Chapman, and, you know, you're adding a top-line closer, and you're going to move Andrew Miller to the eighth inning and Dylan Betances to the seventh inning, and you're going to have an all-time great bullpen. First and foremost, I think we have – one of, if not the best bullpens in baseball right now. How could I sit here and tell you that adding Chapman to that mix would be a bad idea? No, I cannot tell you that. But I'm just telling you, I don't know what you got to give up for a Chapman, but the priority should be a starter. That's how I feel. With our bullpen as strong as it is, with as many pieces as we have, I think the priority has to be starter no matter what. And let's just say we did go out and get a Chapman. And or a Greg Kimbrel or whoever, you're not moving. I mean, I don't know. Are you moving Miller from the freaking closer role? How would you be able to sell that to him? This guy comes in here. He's already got the song. I don't know if this Johnny Cash he comes out to. I heard how would you sell that? The guy is perfect in save opportunities. I think is what he 22 for 22. Let me look that up. Save stats. Bear with me for a second. Yeah, 22. So he's 22 for 22 in saves. He's got a nasty slider. He's basically unhittable. So is Betances. Betances is a young buck, and I think that's why I think Betances earned the closer role this year too. I mean, he's an all-star 2 years in a row. Can't say that for Miller, but Miller's a beast, and Miller's a veteran, and Miller's handling this role perfectly. So much better than freaking Robertson. I'm glad this guy's out of here. But you're going to bring in Chapman? Sorry, buddy. You know, you're talking about a team. Again, we talk about team chemistry and how well they're gelling together and how, you know, everybody seems to like each other. You throw that at them right now? You're going to throw that at him? You know what I mean? I mean, if Chapman was going to come here, I think he's got to, you know, basically be like, I don't mind being the eighth inning guy, you know? I don't know. I wouldn't just throw him into the mix, and because I know he throws 103 miles per hour. I know he's the nastiest thing in baseball when it comes from freaking a pitching standpoint. Period. But again, you know, we got a team here, and you know, what are you gonna do? Just start moving people around. The guy has done nothing. He's guy's been perfect. Basically, the guy's been perfect. You can't take him out of the closer's role. I would be. He'd be pissed, and he'd have a right to be pissed. Either way you look at it. But we'll see what happens. I mean, I don't know. Are they going to get another reliever? I don't know. Whatever. We'll see what happens. I went to the game the other day. The 22nd, that was. And that was Wednesday. Had a good time. Listen, man, I don't know what to tell you. Here's where old man Tommy gets in on talking about the glory days and stuff like that. But I'm sitting there. We were on the main level. A friend got free tickets, so I showed up. I met her. I was there early, and I was meeting her there, so I had a couple of beers and stands. I normally don't do stands. I normally don't. I do Billy's a little bit after the games and stuff like that, but stands, that's the legendary spot. And you go in there, and you see why. You go in there, they got a lot of charm, a lot of stuff in stands. You know, it's a real, real Yankee joint. Billy's, I like it too. It's a little bit more sleek. It's a little bit more. I guess industrial. It's bigger. It's they blew a wall out. They used to have like it used to be like a cafe style, and then they used to kind of pump a bunch of like you know dance party hits with a DJ and stuff like that. Very very good time. When I was younger, I loved to go in there and you know high energy after the game. Love it. But you go into stands, man. You kind of feel it. You kind of it's like our Cubby Bear. It's like our you know whatever that bar is that's associated with every ballpark stands. Does a great job. You know, it was weird. I was sitting there waiting for my friend. I got a Coors Light, and I just see this freaking 10-year-old girl behind the bar. It's a bunch of savage Bronx Yankee fans going nuts, noise, screaming, cursing, hot girls, you know, regular everybody just running. This thing, the bartenders are rough. They're dudes, like 26, 27-year-old dudes. Big guys, sweaty runner. It's like a, it's not a dangerous, scary place, but it's a rough around the edges place. And then you see this, I don't know, 9, 10, 11-year-old girl behind the bar. Her mother, father, whatever. It just shows you it's a family operation. She goes back and she makes her own little Shirley Temple or something, and she's avoiding the bartenders. The bartenders are giving out change. They're rushing. They're jumping around. They're just avoiding this girl as if she's another bartender, and the girl just quietly and, you know, methodically goes up, opens up the reach-in, gets out the cherry juice, and makes herself her own little Shirley Temple like it's the most normal thing in the world to happen, and she leaves out from the – you know, that's the type of stuff you love to see, man. You know, that's just like the old New York stuff. She is not supposed to be behind that bar. Any cop was in there, they saw her behind the bar. I don't know, maybe probably not in the cops in that area because they probably know her. But I'm saying, like, you try that in Manhattan or they would like see a 9-year-old walk out one of these bars on Second Avenue or on, you know, Hell's Kitchen or something like that. It's just a charming thing about New York where this girl probably just, you know, related to the owners. She's a fan. She's the daughter of one of the owners, and she just came up, and she's probably getting, you know, just a great New York you know, hard, you know, authentic New York education and experience. Just, okay, so this is what goes on. These are all the Yankee fans, you know. This is what Daddy's job is. This is what he does, and, you know, everybody's nice, and, you know, she's probably better for it, honestly. She's probably, besides being raised in this politically correct society and being coddled and told how great everybody is, she's doing it right. This little girl is growing up right, and good for her, and good for that family for, you know, exposing her. She's going to be able to say it. She's going to own that place one day. And some guy's going to think that they're going to look at her and underestimate her. They're going to walk in and be like, yeah, who the hell is this chick? This and that. Who's this chick? I'm 35 years old. I was making my own Shirley Temples since 2015 when I was 9 years old behind this bar with all these drunks around here. So, you know what I mean? And then she's going to be able to have that experience to take with her. And, you know, basically, you know, what guy is gonna intimidate her? Nobody's gonna intimidate her, and that's what you love to see. And that's New York City, and that used to be the Yankees. The other thing I wanted to freaking say, I'm sitting up there. I'm in the main level, so that's not the bottom level. It's not the top tier. It's the middle one. So they call it the main level. There's Oriole fans walking around all over this place. You know what I mean? Like, it just didn't used to happen that way. If in that old building, that freaking cathedral, if you're walking around that cathedral with anything other than Yankee stuff on, you know, I'm not saying in a violent way. You weren't going to get attacked physically. But you know what? You were going to hear it. You were going to get booed. And yeah, you laugh it off, and then we laugh it off, and then you know what? Somebody buys somebody a beer. But these Oriole fans are just walking around, proud Oriole fans, like it's nothing, like not even, I don't know, man, come on, can we, it's not going to happen, it's asking too much, but we're not going to go back to those days. But it's just, you know, just sitting there, knowing in the 90s what would happen if somebody walked by my section and our section with a bunch of, you know, with Orioles gear on, you know, you wouldn't do it. You know, the ones who did that were crazy enough to do it were, you know, made aware of their mistakes. Let's just put it that way. I get this YouTube video, this hysterical YouTube video. This Boston Red Sox fan must have just been walking around the bleachers, and he must have been holding up the camera because it's basically a point of view of him, and you just see what a Red Sox eye view of the fan experience walking from out of the wings of the bleachers across the walkway and to his seat, and just the annihilation that he took. And you know what? None of it was violent. None of it was mean-spirited. But yeah, I guess it was a little asshole. And it was just hysterical. If you YouTube that, go check it out, and it'll be pretty entertaining. Maybe next time in the next. Let me actually see. You know what? What are we doing here? Who's busy? You guys are sitting around listening to a podcast. Nobody's. You can hang out for 1 second because you're going to like this. If you actually do look it up, I'm going to see on YouTube if I could find it and tell you exactly where to find it. Red Sox fan in Yankee. Yeah, I think this is it. All right, it's a little crude. This guy's holding his camera. He's walking through. Everybody in the bleachers are just killing him. And he finally gets to his seat. And everybody's got a smile on their face. And now he's at his seat and he just relaxes and stays there. But yeah, that was it. That was freaking perfect. That's exactly what should happen. As opposed to what happens now. Everybody just, oh, hello. Let's be nice. Let's be politically correct. Good to see you. Good luck. Hope you have a good game. Wow, what a well-played game by both sides. Yeah, that's what I want to deal with. That's what I want in this freaking new corporate shopping mall they call a stadium. All right, I'll stop right now before I get crazy. But look this up on YouTube, guys. Red Sox fan ventures through Yankee Stadium bleachers. That's what the video is called. Red Sox fan ventures through Yankee Stadium bleachers. And it actually is very funny. And connected to it. When you see all the stuff on the right, there's great stuff. Yankee bloopers, Yankee, they got the Tino Martinez, Benitez fight, bunch of good stuff. So check it out. Thank you again for listening. Please email me, yankeesandgravy@gmail.com. Find me on Facebook, Yankee Gravy on Facebook, Twitter, @YankeesandGravy. And most importantly, subscribe on iTunes. Go to the App Store. Search for the podcast app for iTunes. It'll come right up. Download it. It's absolutely free. When you download it, search in there, Yankees and Gravy. Subscribe, and then you just won't be able to get rid of me. All right, guys. Thanks again so much for listening. We will talk next time.